It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. As always, I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on the bird at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also available on the Twitter at Locked On Rockets. Almost forgot it there for a second. That would have been really awkward. And hey, by now, if you've listened to this show ever before, you guys should know the drill. If you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, you appreciate the content, the guests, the analysis, the rumors, the speculation, all of that, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. And really, that last one, I mentioned it in the last pod, I am pushing to try and get 300 reviews before the resumption of the NBA season. I noticed a few people have already gone and done that, so if you are one of those people, I appreciate that. So you listening right now, if you haven't done it, I would really appreciate it. I'm setting a personal goal, and I really want to hit that number 300 before the season returns. And so if you haven't left a review, if you haven't dropped some stars, I would really, really appreciate it if you could do that. I usually try not to peddle for that too much. I drop the line in at the very beginning of the show, but I'm setting this as a personal goal and would really like to accomplish it with your help. So for today's show, I want to hit on a couple of my remaining thoughts and points that I didn't get to hit on in the last show about the Orlando bubble and all the news that broke out about how, you know, the phased plan and return to action and all the different amenities and things that'll be going on inside the bubble, the accommodations for players, stuff of that nature. So I want to hit on that. And then there was also a really well-done article by Kelly Eco over at The Athletic, a one-on-one with Austin Rivers. And there's a few points from that article that I want to highlight because it was a really great interview, and there were some concerns that Austin Rivers kind of addressed that as Rockets fans, we've heard consistently throughout the season, and it always feels great when you hear from somebody within the organization, whether it's front office or coaching or a player himself, and they kind of address one or multiple of these issues, and you're like, yeah, like he feels the same way we do. This is great. They're going to fix things. Like, so I want to get to those points in just a second, but first, the Orlando bubble. So one of the things that, and this is kind of just an afterthought, but you know, we've experienced this in back-to-back seasons now where the Rockets have been negatively impacted by, you know, dropping in the standings or by a skid of games, and this season's no different. Because they dropped those four games right before the hiatus went into effect and the season was shut down indefinitely at the time, they dropped in the standings, and they are currently sitting as the sixth seed in the Western Conference. So because of that, they are not in the luxury Disney resort, which is the Grand Destino, right? They are in the mid-tier resort, which is the Grand Floridian. So the way that I remember reading these hotels, these resorts being described, is the Grand Destino is like a complete luxury resort. It's the best one on the campus. The Grand Floridian is basically like a five-star hotel, and then the Yacht Club is a more or less like three- or four-star hotel with some not-so-great reviews. So the Rockets could have been in the upper echelon of those teams, and they could have been up there with the top dogs, but because they dropped in the standings, they didn't do themselves any favors. Now, one other element of this is there's two more points about the bubble that I want to hit on before I get to the Austin Rivers one-on-one. First of which is there is going to be an insane amount of tampering going on inside this bubble. And if you don't agree with me on that, then I'm sorry. I try not to come up here and be the voice of God, but you're wrong. players in such close proximity are definitely going to be angling towards this upcoming offseason, just kind of chatting each other up, and probably even more so than during the regular season, right? Because these players are going to be able to hang out together outside. Yes, the interactions will be limited, but they're going to be in this enclosed space. And the one benefit that that has for the Rockets, and would have been better if they were in the Grand Destino, but they're in the Grand Floridian, is Russell Westbrook and Jeremy Grant's relationship. So Russell Westbrook and Jeremy Grant, they're pretty tight. Just the other day, Jeremy Grant went on, I forget which show it was talking to Chris Haynes, I believe it was, and was kind of sharing his relationship with Russ and how, you know, really just saying nothing but good things about Russ, really hyping up their relationship. And Jeremy Grant is a guy that lots of Rockets fans have had their eyes on, and he has the ability to opt out of his contract this summer, or not summer, sorry, that's just force of habit, this offseason, however short it will be, he has the ability to opt out of his contract. And currently he's making, I think it's $9.3 million a year. And here's the thing, with the cap squish that's coming up, and with the fact that the Rockets are going to be able to use their non-taxpayer MLE this upcoming offseason, the same non-taxpayer MLE that they used to sign PJ Tucker a few offseasons ago, they'll be able to match roughly what Jeremy Grant is currently making. Now, is he eligible for more than that? Absolutely. Is there a team out there that will be able to pay him more than what he's currently making? Chances are slim to none. Because of the cap squish and because of the teams that he would want to go to remain competitive and also be able to offer him a starting spot, I mean, I haven't quite looked at the entire list of NBA teams and made an exhaustive list of, okay, who's an option for Grant and who's not. You know, will he stay in Denver? Will he go? He's already vocalized that he's thinking of opting out of this contract. And that's huge, because if he opts out, then he's on the table. And I think with his relationship with Russ, with the fact that he would fit in beautifully with this small ball system, PJ Tucker would still be your five, but Jeremy Grant would basically fill in that secondary wing role. And then you'd have two amazing weak side defenders in Jeremy Grant and Robert Covington in your starting lineup. PJ Tucker still holding it down in the middle, going up against the bigger bodied centers of the NBA. And then Russ and James Harden. Now, I know this is a lot of speculation, but I hadn't mentioned it yet on the podcast. And when we do kind of an off-season, you know, planning, free agency type podcast, I'll be sure to go into even more depth with it. But I just wanted to cover it right there, because this is an opportunity for Russell Westbrook to kind of get his free agency fingers going and maybe get a little bit of low-key tampering done with Jeremy Grant. And the last point that I want to make is, apparently there is also, and I apologize for leaving this minor tidbit out of the original phased plan podcast going over all the logistics of it. There will be a 1-800 helpline for NBA players to call should there be somebody breaking the rules of the NBA bubble. I'm just going to let you soak in that for a second. Because who do we know here at Locked On Rockets? Who do we miss occasionally that would love to rat out his opposing, not teammates, what am I saying? Opposing players. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. None other than a Mr. Christopher Emmanuel Paul. I cannot imagine how much grief Chris Paul is going to be giving his fellow players by, like, I'm just picturing him, like, poking his head out of, like, the hotel door, or, like, just sitting behind his blinds, like, just barely, like, open, kind of, like, surveying the campus and just waiting for somebody to break a rule. And he's looking down at the calendar and he's like, who are we playing in tomorrow's game? Okay, Bron and AD. Yeah, hey, 1-800-NBA. I saw Bron and AD and they were playing ping pong and they weren't 6 feet apart, so that's a violation, right? Just, you know, he is, for all his antics, I cannot imagine. There's gonna be some very interesting stories that come out of the NBA bubble. That's all I'm saying. And I cannot wait to see how that all develops. But I figured I would leave that there, and we're just going to kind of leave it up to your imagination as to how Chris Paul and others, it's not just Chris, he's not the only, you know, tattletale amongst NBA players, but him and, you know who, well, T-Wolves aren't going, but D'Lo would have been a good one too. You know, the whole phone call deal with D'Lo earlier in the season. But anyways, I digress. Wanted to get those main points hammered out. So coming up, we'll discuss Austin Rivers one-on-one with Kelly Eco of The Athletic and some of the points that he was making. But first, I have a quick word from our friends over at Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models for different cars and vehicles, it's basically impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why would you want to endure the pointless and sometimes intimidating questioning, like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? And then you gotta wait while the counter guy goes behind, you know, to his computer to order the parts, and he's only choosing the brand that his warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com's catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. About to go over the Athletic article, the one-on-one with Austin Rivers. And so there's a few standout points from this article that I want to highlight and then discuss. So the first of which is a pair of questions that Kelly asked. With any system, it's about maximizing the strengths and minimizing the weaknesses at any given moment on the floor. We've seen how you guys play within the system already. How can you amplify it further? Austin's response, I think speed. I think playing with speed, I think if we're going to go small, we can't play slow. That goes against everything that we got going on. I think speed and ball movement are the two ways that we can really bother people with this small ball. Kelly goes back. Speaking of ball movement, the system that you guys have doesn't involve a whole lot of it. Most of that is due to the offensive abilities of James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Even though you have these two great players who can shoulder most of the load, is it better to incorporate some ball movement, or is spacing and spreading the floor more important? Austin comes back with no. We have to have ball movement. Especially in the playoffs, the floor shrinks, fouls don't get called as much, the game changes. They're allowed to be more physical, there's not going to be fans there to influence the refs, so there's no antics. It's going to be a very physical game where you can just hear players and refs talking. I think because of that, we really have to continue to do what we do. You know, we have to move the ball and play at a high speed. So before I move on to any other points in this article, because there's a few more that I want to hit on, Let's talk about those first two. So speed, and the speed at which the team plays with, we've seen it pretty frequently that James Harden, especially pre-Slim Jim James Harden, he is a player who has this slow, methodical style about him. Yes, he's still able to get out and transition, but James is has a very measured style of play. He is cold, calculating, whatever you want to call it, whatever adjectives you want to throw at him. He doesn't play at the same speed as Russell Westbrook or at the same speed that some of the other guys on the team would probably benefit from playing at, which is why this whole physique change for James, where he dropped the 15 to 20 pounds, whatever it was, and you know, now we're looking at this new Slim Jim James Harden, is really exciting because now his body is going to be better equipped to go at the same speed as Russell Westbrook, to be a terror in transition like Russell Westbrook can be. And a point that Itamar, who, you know, friend of the pod, Mr. Disney Gary Clark himself, pointed out on Twitter the other day, after, you know, reading this article and kind of highlighting it, he pointed out that the offense tends to struggle when Russ grabs the rebound and initiates the fast break, whereas when James grabs the rebound, it tends to flourish a bit more. And the analysis from this was basically, when James grabs the rebound, he does look to pass ahead quite a bit more than Russ does. When Russ grabs the rebound, he grabs it and looks to go 120 miles an hour coast to coast without passing the ball until he gets to the other side of the court and he's trying to set somebody up for an open three or, you know, a cut to the basket, something along those lines. James is doing the passing ahead thing quite a bit more. And that's a point that Austin makes a little bit further in the article, is that, you know, getting other guys involved, moving the ball up the court without having to dribble the ball up the court, is an element that needs to be implemented more in this system. being able to pass the ball ahead. I'm a huge fan of those like almost full court passes that James would do. They are a bit risky, and there are times when they do get picked off. But think about, especially go back to the 16-17 season, which I will still argue is maybe James Harden's second best season as a Houston Rocket. You can make the argument for third and, you know, put his MVP season and then maybe this last year, the unguardable tour went ahead of that. But I really think he was at his deadliest during the 16-17 season because his passing was on another plane of existence. And think back to that season and all the different outlet passes that he would throw in transition and just rack up easy dimes and easy buckets for the team because they were playing at a faster pace. They were absolutely running and gunning that year. And I do think that there is some merit to the idea that when James gets the rebound, if Russ were to start leaking out a bit rather than focusing on grabbing as many defensive boards, if Russ were to try and leak out to about the half court margin or even further past that and let James drill him with a pass, then Russ gets to attack the defense that isn't set. He doesn't have to use as much energy going coast to coast. And we think about all the times that Russ was successful in transition by himself as like a one-man wrecking crew where he just picks up the rebound and then takes off and he's still able to either facilitate a bucket or score the ball himself. Think about that, but you cut half the court out of the way for him. You get him the ball with momentum. You know, he catches the ball as he's running down the court and then he gets to attack one or two defenders instead of having to slice and dice his way through three or four or even all five defenders, right? So I think there's definitely some merit there to the idea of playing with speed and you know, trying to get in the open court quicker. And if Russ, and here's the thing, Russ isn't, he's allowed to do the same thing. If Russ gets the rebound, he should also be looking to pass ahead. You know, and that's hopefully something that they'll work on in training camp, hopefully something that they will address. Russ, it's great that you rebound the ball so well. You rebound it as, you know, as good, if not better than James does. But you need to look to pass ahead first rather than starting the break yourself. Because in Oklahoma City, he didn't have that option. He didn't have targets like James Harden or like Austin Rivers or Eric Gordon who thrive in transition. He didn't have the ability to do these, you know, beautiful, you know, half court or almost full court passes to a teammate who leaked out, you know, at the end of the final defensive possession and try to get down there for an easy bucket. I think that that is something that we should all be looking forward to moving forward. And I'm excited at that possibility of seeing that be implemented a bit more. Because again, if Austin is talking about it, it means that the team is probably talking about it. And if the team is talking about it, then it's probably something that we will see implemented further down the line. So coming up here in just 1 second, I want to hit on the remaining points from this article. But first, I have a quick word from our friends over at Built Bars. So if you've taken me up on one of these offers of ordering Built Bars, if you tried one of their flavors like the peanut butter brownie or the mint brownie delight or my personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse, if you've tried these, if you've ordered maybe a variety pack or a flavor that sounded really good to you, I've got some great news for you right now. Built Bar's entire catalog is actually 50% off. They're doing an overstock sale. So every bar that they have on their entire website, all 50% off. And here's the best part. 100% of their profits will be donated to organizations that support education, poverty, equality, and ending hate and racism. This, you know, partnering with a company like this that shares the same values and beliefs that we share here at Locked On regarding everything that's been going on is huge. So if you've tried the Built Bars, great. Keep ordering them and you can get them for 50% off now. If you haven't tried them, check them out. They're great. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're not like traditional protein bars. They're not chalky. They're not gritty at all. They come in 16 amazing different flavors. It's basically a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And I'm not actually sure if the promo code will stack with the 50% off, but either way, you can check them out at their website at builtbar.com. And if you want, you can use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. So be sure to go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm starting to think maybe I should have read this last point before I went into my whole spiel about the kick ahead passes, but anyways, here we go. Kelly asks Austin, the pace at which you guys play has gone up quite a bit from last season's team. Coach Mike D'Antoni told me he wants to play even faster than before. When you hear that, what exactly does that mean to you in the half court? Austin replies, yeah, he wants to play at a different speed, meaning he wants more kick-ahead passes. He wants the ball to be kicked ahead, not dribbling it up all the time. Obviously, that's James, and we're still going to do a lot of that because James is our best scorer. James is the best scorer in the league, so you have to play through that and let him do his own thing, obviously. But at the same time, what Mike also wants is us moving the ball up, you know, really allowing me, Eric, guys like that who can really attack and do that more. And all that will do is allow guys like Jeff Green, who are big and have the ability to put the ball on the floor, and really allow our shooters to get even more shots and more looks. It'll make James and Russ's jobs easier. Obviously, it goes without saying, playing at a different speed mainly goes to Russ's strengths because there's nobody in the NBA playing at that speed and doing it as good as he is. So it helps us in a variety of ways. So that kind of highlights the point that I was trying to make in the previous segment, talking about those kick-ahead passes and just kind of identifying the fact that the offense does happen to be quite a bit more successful when the Rockets do initiate those kick-ahead passes, which are largely from James, which we haven't seen as much as of late. Well, as of late, because there's been no basketball. Anyways, as of late, you know, regarding the NBA season before it was suspended. And I do think that there's some merit there, and I appreciate Austin, you know, kind of addressing that. But he goes on to talk about the other side of the basketball. So Kelly mentions, switching to the other side of the ball, if you switch a lot, it's a concern if you don't communicate and rotate. How does a new training camp help with that? And Austin shares, well, I think what helps is that there are no fans. I mean, for the communication defensively, if there's any time small ball will work in terms of defense, I think it would be right now if we go to Disney. I mean, the help side weak defense, if you're going to be able to hear everything, you're going to be able to hear everything. There's no excuse for us not to be communicating on the floor. You're not hearing a pick coming, switch this, that. I mean, it's going to be quiet in the gym. So our voice, you know, we really can make the small ball work defensively. I think we would have made it work with the crowd anyway, but the fact that it's going to be quiet in this gym, that really matters on defense, just with communication and talking. That is a good point, and I haven't heard any more rumors about the idea of like crowd noise being piped into the gym as like supplementary noise, but the idea of having just the players and the refs on the court and basically being able to hear everything that's going on, it'll be interesting. It'll be like when you walk into, you know, a YMCA gym and, you know, guys are playing pickup and yeah, there's some yelling and whatnot, but there's no crowd. There's no cheering. There's not all this ambient noise that is taking away from the action on the court. So I do think that is an interesting tidbit there as far as the dynamic of small ball and the fact that it is such a communication heavy defense, right? And the Rockets have had this switch everything scheme for so long now that you would think it would be ingrained in them, but they've modified their roster. They've had different guys coming through this team, and it is a difficult style of defense to play because, like we've said about small ball before, there's a slim margin for error. If you blow a switch, if you don't switch quickly enough, if you make the wrong read, you're going to give up an easy bucket. And you could say the same thing about that with, you know, a zone defense or just man-to-man defense or whatever. You can make that argument for almost any scheme in the NBA, but specifically with the switch everything scheme, it is even more apparent because it's so glaringly obvious when a mistake was made, when two guys get confused on who is supposed to switch or not switch, you know, when there's a breakdown on the weak side or so. It is very apparent to me, and I'm sure it's apparent to you, when there's been a defensive breakdown for the Houston Rockets. So I do think that this benefits them being able to get that communication out there and have kind of these open lines of communication without all the distractions of a potential crowd. Last point that I want to hit on is Kelly asks about Mike D'Antoni wanting to open up the rotation, says, you guys have talked a lot about the depth of this team, but why is the second unit so important, and what specific impact are you looking to have in the Disney bubble? Austin shares, I think what it does is it provides depth. It makes us harder to guard. I think, like anything, would you want one benefit or would you want more, say 4 or 5 or even 6? It's an easy answer. So obviously, we're going to play through James most of the time and then Russ second most of the time. They're our two best players. But I think he does want to open it up more, give guys a little bit more opportunity just because I think teams were narrowing so much in on them. it's not that we were relying on them too much, but that they were dominating so much of it, and he wants to spread it out a little bit. Obviously, it'll still be James and Russ, but, you know, I'll have the ball more, Austin saying that, guys like Eric will have the ball more, and we'll have a lot of other guys getting opportunities for shots who are spot-up guys like Daniel House or Ben McLemore, and other guys, you know, Jeff Green, who can do a little bit of everything. I think that's his reasoning behind it from what I heard. I wholeheartedly agree with this. And I think one area that I have mentioned before, specifically talking about James and, you know, the whole mid-range argument, but even the Rockets as a whole, their system is largely predictable. Yes, there are wrinkles and actions that happen away from the ball to try and get guys freed up for open shots, whether it's a little flare screen here or there or some backdoor cuts, things like that. Yes, there are wrinkles to the Rockets offense, but largely it feels very predictable most of the time. And that's okay, it still works, but one thing that I'd miss and that I wish would be implemented a bit more is think back to the Mike D'Antoni Phoenix Suns. And maybe I'm misremembering this, but I don't really think that I am. It felt to me that those Phoenix Suns teams were deadlier than this current iteration of the Houston Rockets because multiple guys on that team could be the focal point on offense. You know, I'm thinking, like, you had guys, obviously Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire were the tandem duo, the best two players on the team. But then you had other guys that could attack. You had guys like Leandro Barbosa coming off the bench. You had guys like Sean Marion. You had, you know, Jason Richards. You had so many different guys who were capable of attacking. And Joe Johnson's another one. I mean, you had so many different offensive weapons on those teams that at no point was it just, okay, our initial action, you know, James has the ball, Russ has the ball. Here comes them trying to break down the defense. Okay, that, you know, and they pass it out for an open shot. The open shot's not there. Okay, great. We're going to reset the shot, or we're going to reset the offense. You know, and then you've got PJ or Daniel House Jr. in the corner, and they've got nowhere to go with it. So then they kick the ball back out to James or Russ, and they try for a second, you know, penetration. It never really felt like that with the Suns to me. It never really felt like they were constantly resetting to Steve Nash after the initial offensive action didn't work out. And I feel like that can be the case with this team, but it depends on who that pass goes to. So say James or Russ tries to make something happen and then they kick the ball out. If it lands to PJ or Daniel House, it's not going to go anywhere. Like I feel like, to his credit, House has been a bit better about attacking, you know, off the closeout than he was, you know, last season. But I do still think that, you know, when the ball finds its way to PJ Tucker, it's not going to result in a drive. You know, he's going to try and get the shot up, but if he can't, then he's going to kick the ball back out or pass it again. And I feel like that's an area that needs to be taken advantage of, is once you've got the defense scrambling off of the initial drive by James or Russ, then you have to keep the defense on its toes. The moment you give them a chance to reset, to close out on the shooter, and then get everybody back in defensive position, then you've lost that element of building on the initial offensive drive or whatever's going on, whether it's a drive, whether it's a series of passes, whatever's happening to break down the defense to try and facilitate a shot, either at the rim or around the three-point arc. You lose that once the ball stops. So I think that's another element of wanting to play with speed that Mike D'Antoni wants more of. And also Austin talking about getting guys involved, you know, getting the ball moving around, right? So that it doesn't just stop on that one guy on the corner and then he looks to reset to James or Russ. No, kick it to the next guy and then the next guy and then the next guy. The bucket doesn't have to come from James or Russ or off of an assist from James or Russ. The bucket can come from a pass from PJ Tucker out to Eric Gordon for a three, or maybe Eric drives and then kicks it to Austin, and Austin gets a drive and then gets a layup. I don't know, but I'd like to see, and we've seen flashes of it. We've seen moments where this team has had better ball movement, where we watch a possession and there's, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 passes all in one possession. And even earlier in the season, I remember there have been some people saying, you know, oh, it takes your team, you know, 10 plus passes to get a good shot, where, you know, James and Russ can do that in one or two passes. I mean, yeah, you don't just pass the ball more just for arbitrary reasons. You don't just try passing the ball more because you want more passes on a given possession. You pass the ball to disrupt the defense, to keep the defense on their toes, to look for a clean open shot. If the open shot is there when Russ or James drives, then take it. If they have an open target for a three-pointer, then take the shot. But we've also seen plenty of times where our shooters shy away from taking the open shots. And it's frustrating, right? Whether it's Tucker is open for a shot, or Rocco, or House, or even Ben McLemore at times, you know, they're open and you're like, shoot the ball. And then nothing, you know, they pass up on the open shot. And MDA is a big fan of taking any shot, even if it's not completely open, even if it's slightly contested. So there's no reason for them to be passing up shots. These role players should be getting anywhere from like 6 to 10 3-point attempts per game, basically. So I feel like I've kind of ramped myself up a little bit on that point. So I think this would probably be a good place to kind of wrap things up, because I kind of made my Rockets themed points. However, I do want to wrap up with a little story, a little recognition. So first off, today is Juneteenth, which is an important holiday. It's the end of slavery. So this holiday means a lot, especially everything going on, all things considered, with what's been going on recently with the protests, with the racial injustice, all the things going on, this holiday means a lot. And specifically, Russell Westbrook will be hosting a virtual block party in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in honor of Juneteenth. And so that is something that you can check out if you haven't looked into that. Just jump to Russell Westbrook's Instagram page, I think is where he's advertising that and kind of highlighting everything going on there, trying to promote it and get as many people to join as possible. And so I just wanted to highlight that for a minute, that, you know, as I'm recording this on June 19th, the morning of June 19th, just wanted to highlight that. And then I do also want to mention the fact that it was, what, 4 years ago? Hang on, 4 years ago today. I think it was 4 years ago if I lost it. I lost the story. Hang on, I had it right here. Nope, that's not it. And that's still not it. There we go, I found it, sorry. I had it pulled up on my phone and then it disappeared from me. June 19th, 2016, the Cleveland, this is for you, LeBron James, and the comeback against the Golden State Warriors down 3-1. And I think that, you know, even though this is a Locked On Rockets podcast, I just want to give a quick recap of that, because I get this Axios Sports newsletter and it's actually one of the coolest things ever. So I'm just going to go through this quick recap. 4 years ago today, the Cavaliers completed their epic comeback over the Warriors, becoming the first team ever to overcome a 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals. This was the Cavs' first championship and the city of Cleveland's first major pro sports title since 1964, when the Browns won the Super Bowl. For LeBron James, it was the ultimate highlight in a highlight-filled career and cemented his legacy both as a hometown hero and a basketball legend. The timeline, though we all know the story now, don't forget how improbable this outcome seemed at the time. The 73-9 Warriors broke the 1996 Bulls mark for the best regular season record behind Steph Curry's unanimous MVP winning season, in which he hit 5 threes a game at a 45% clip. Down 3-1, the Cavs dropped games 1 and 2 in Oakland, then blew out the Warriors at home before failing to hold serve in Game 4. Draymond Green suspended. At the end of Game 4, Green was called for a questionable flagrant foul, which led to his suspension for Game 5 due to an accrual of flagrant foul points. Kyrie and LeBron go off. Green's suspension opened the door for the Cavs, who marched right through it behind a combined 146 points across the next two games from their two best players, setting up the decisive Game 7, the block and the shot. LeBron and Kyrie each had one trick left, as LeBron's chase down block of Andre Iguodala kept the game tied with under 2 minutes left, and Kyrie's dagger three put them up a good minute later. Just wanted to recap that, because for just basketball fans in general, that Game 7, those final minutes of that Game 7 finals, was something I will never forget. I remember rushing home from work trying to catch the second half of the game, and I did, and just watching that game was something else. I know it's not Rocket-centric, but it's still NBA-centric, and I wanted to share that. So I think that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.